Have you ever received a message or an instruction that purported to be from a certain person, and yet you kind of questioned whether it was really from that person? This happens with kids a lot. My daughter will go to my son and say, "Dad said it's my turn to use the video game," and you kind of got to wonder, did Dad really say that? Well, this is kind of one of the things we're going to be talking about this morning, and I have a movie clip to kind of introduce us into this idea. This is from the movie Crimson Tide. It's about 10 years old, and the movie takes place on an American nuclear submarine. The people on this submarine have just received instructions to fire their nuclear missiles on a rebel Russian base. Okay? So they're about to do so, kind of recognizing the graveness of that situation. And then they receive another transmission that gets interrupted. And they're not sure what that message says, and they can't verify who it's from. So this question of the authenticity of the message becomes really important to them. Let's watch the clip and see how it plays out.
Keep the watch. Secure from battle station torpedo. And battle station's missile. A strategic launch.
Secure from battle station's torpedo.
Sir, request permission to authenticate.
Permission granted. Authenticate.
Bravo, Echo, Echo, Charlie, Alpha, Tango, Alpha.
Bravo, Echo, Echo, Charlie, Alpha, Tango, Alpha.
Message is authentic, sir.
I concur, sir.
I concur, sir. Message is authentic. Sir, you kept this missile key.
This is the captain. Set condition 1SQ for strategic missile launch. Spin up missiles 1 through 5 and 20 through 24. The release of nuclear weapons has been authorized. This is not a drill.
Head 1/3, steady eyes, sir.
Make your depth 150 feet. Zero bubble, up slow and silent to launch depth.
Up slow and silent to launch depth. Aye, aye, Captain.
Captain, got the EAM.
What do you think?
I think there's nothing on this.
Yes, sir. It got cut off during the attack.
Then it's meaningless.
Sir, this is an EAM pertaining to nuclear missile.
No, Mr. Hunter. That's a message fragment.
Because it got cut off during the attack, so the message could mean anything. It could be a message to a board. It could be a message.
It could be a fake Russian transmission.
Which is exactly why we need to confirm, sir. All I'm asking for is the time we need to get back online.
Calm down, Mr. Hunter.
I am calm.
You don't appear to be calm.
Calm weapons. Missile systems ready to launch in 4 minutes.
Well, the reason Mr. Hunter doesn't appear to be calm is because he has this message fragment and he doesn't know who it's from or what it says. The rest of the movie basically tells the story of the extremes that this guy goes to in order to determine the source of this message. Sometimes the authenticity of a message is really important. Sometimes it determines whether you engage in nuclear war. Other times, the authenticity of a message can determine what you think about God. Do you ever wonder about this whole Christian thing? Do you ever worry that this message about forgiveness and reconciliation and a new community and a God who loves us is just somebody's clever invention? Do you ever worry that this whole thing came from people and not God? How do you know you aren't just here because somebody convinced you and you fell for it? Well, this morning we're going to continue our study in the book of Galatians by dealing with this very issue. Last week we began by looking at Galatians and saw how this is a really critical book for the life of the church. This book was written probably only 15, 16 years after Jesus rose from the dead. And it was written to address a group of churches that were confused about the gospel. Paul had preached one message to them, but there had arisen this kind of alternate gospel. And so there were two versions, and Paul had to write to them to say, my version, what I originally preached to you, this is the one that's true. And it's important that you get it right because you're some of the very first churches. And if you don't get this right, this whole church thing, this whole work of God might be threatened. So he writes this letter to kind of clear up their misunderstanding. But to do that, he has to convince them first that what he has to say, that his message is authentic. His gospel is from God. And that's what we want to see this morning too, that this gospel, this message about Jesus creating a new community, about us being rightly related to God as our Father, and because of that, being able to relate to each other, that this is truly a message from God, and not just from other people. If the message in Crimson Tide really came from the right authorities, that would have pretty serious implications. The same thing is true for us. If this message that we believe really came from God, then the implications are significant. So we're going to be looking at Galatians 1, verses 11 through chapter 2, 14 this morning. And we're going to see how Paul tries to demonstrate that his message is authentic. It's a large chunk of Galatians. I'm going to start out by reading the first two verses, because they really provide kind of a roadmap for where this section is going. You can follow along on page 1151 in your pew Bibles if you want to track along in the NIV. But again, I'm going to be reading from my own kind of very loose interpretive translation as a way of getting this text to come alive to us a little bit, using some fresh language. And I've tried to draw out some of the themes that I see there that we're going to be looking at as well. So here's Galatians 1, 11 to 12. Now I want all of you, my brothers and sisters, to know that the gospel message that I preached among you didn't come from a person who thought it up. I know this because it wasn't passed down to me from some group of people, and I didn't learn it from some person who taught it to me. Instead, I first heard of it directly from Jesus Christ through a supernatural vision. So Paul begins by telling his story. He uses his story to demonstrate that his message comes from God. I'm going to have some time in the middle of my sermon to ask you guys a couple of questions and let our stories illustrate God's reality. So I want to give you a heads up for that. When I ask, you don't have to be surprised. So Paul's purpose here is to work through this issue of how his experience with God relates to other people. How do those two things relate? And how does one impact the other? And the other impact the one? So he starts by removing people from the equation altogether and just talking about him and God. And then he kind of gradually works people back into the equation. He gradually starts talking about how people affect our experience with God. So the first thing he does is tell his story of how he encountered Christ, what that supernatural vision was all about. This is verses 13 through 17. I know that you have heard about the person I used to be when I was one of the Jewish leaders. You know that I was the best of all the Jewish leaders at persecuting the churches of God. And I tried to completely destroy every last one. I wanted to be the best Jew possible, better than anyone else. I was more passionate about following and defending all of our ancient traditions than anyone I knew. But God had different plans. He had decided before I was even born that I would be given a special job in life. So he reached out to me because of his grace. And then when he was ready, he made me understand in a deeply personal way who his son really was, so that I could spread that gospel message among those people who weren't ethnically Jewish. Now after this happened, the first thing I did was not to go to talk to some people about the message that I had received. I didn't even make the trip to talk to Jerusalem, to talk with those people who had earlier been given the same calling as apostles that I had just received. Instead, I went the other direction, into Arabia, and then after that, back to where I had come from, Damascus. Remember the game that we talked about last week? I suggested that apart from God, to figure out where we belong, to figure out how we kind of fit in the world. We're forced to compare ourselves to other people, to look at how we stack up against others, and determine our worth, determine our place in this world based on that. I called it the life without God game. Well, Paul starts out by saying that in those terms, he was doing pretty well. You could say he was winning the game. He was the last person in the world that needed some type of life change. He was the best, and he was getting better. Everything was working out. He didn't need any motivation to change the rules. But then God intervened. Then God changed everything for him. The language that Paul uses here is reminiscent of the Old Testament saints. Paul's trying to point out that the same God that worked in the Old Testament, the same God that you know and are familiar with, he's the one that interrupted my life. The same God that first called Abraham. The same God that first called Isaiah. The same God that called Jeremiah. Listen to Jeremiah 1:5. The word of the Lord came to me, saying, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." You see some of the similar language there? Before you were born, from birth, being set apart, being called as a messenger to the nations, to the people that didn't know God. This was the same God that Paul had an encounter with, calling a new person to a similar task as Jeremiah. So Paul wants to make it clear that this gospel he's preaching begins with God. It began with a dramatic encounter with the living Jesus Christ. And that's true of us too. Often our encounters aren't quite as dramatic as Paul's, and that's okay. But if you follow Christ, if you trust him, then on some level you've had an experience with God. You've met him somewhere. You've seen him at work in your life. The gospel begins with God. So for Paul, everything changed in a moment. God appeared to him apart from other people being involved. And he didn't do what I would have done right away. Go check it out. Tell somebody, "Hey, this crazy thing happened to me. What do you think? Is this real or is something weird going on with me?" He doesn't need to do that because he's confident that this is God working in his life. And I've asked this question of my own story at times. I grew up going to church, and so for me, Christianity was kind of always there. It was kind of always a part of my life. As a kid, I didn't kind of fully embrace Christianity. I wasn't totally sure, but I wasn't ready to ditch it either. It was kind of just testing things, checking it out. In high school then, we moved to a new city, and we looked for a new church, and we found this church that had a really cool youth pastor. Now, not as cool as Jordan, of course, but, you know, it's a pretty high bar, so you can't expect that. But it was through the passion and love of this guy that I really started to think God might be real. That God seemed like he was actually at work in my life. And this wasn't just something that other people had told me. But in moments of doubt, I can ask myself, was it really God at work in my life, or was I just kind of a lonely high schooler who needed some attention? Was it God, or was it other people? But then I think about my life, and I think about how I've seen God show up and make himself real to me. I think about times for me in college where I've seen God protecting me from issues of sin and keeping me safe from harm. I think about how I've seen God work in my marriage, and marriage has been a tough thing for us at times, and I'm not sure we'd be married still if it weren't for God showing up at work in my life. So I have these times where I say, you know, I have encountered God. It's not just other people. Other people have been a big part of my experience with God, but I've encountered him directly. I've seen him at work. So So Paul's story reminds us that God is at work, and he helps us to look for ways that God may have been at work in our lives. So that's what I want to do now. Stop a moment and see if anybody has any stories to share about ways that you may have seen God at work in your life recently. And it could be anything. We had some stories people shared this morning. Somebody came up to me afterwards and said, I was going to share this, but I felt kind of silly. It was a story about losing his glasses while he was hiking a mountain and praying that God would help him find them. And on the way back down, he found them. And that might seem silly, but often those are the times we know God is real. So share anything, even if it sounds silly. Anybody have any stories or examples of how God has been made real to you? Anybody? Sure. Chris? Yeah, I'll come and bring you the mic so other people can hear well.
I have to say it's actually happened 3 or 4 times in my life, but I won't tell all the stories because take too long. But the one that I think is most significant was the day that my sister died. That night, in a vision, I actually saw her, and she had been operated on during that day. And when I saw her in this vision, I could see her scar, but it was completely healed. And in fact, in the vision, it was beautiful, and she was beautiful. She was like an angel. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you what comfort that gave me. It was really phenomenal, and I know God sent that vision to me.
That's neat. Thank you for sharing.
About 10 years before I became a Christian, I had an interesting experience driving down the highway about 10 miles from my goal, and I started talking with myself about an accident that could happen, and the car coming about 40 miles an hour into my driver's door, and what would happen. Got down to that corner eventually, and I stopped, and it was a red light, and when the light turned green, I said, I better hold off a minute, and I held back a couple of seconds, and I started out, and the guy was able to miss me.
Wow. That's neat. Thank you for sharing. Any others? Just ways that God has been real. Marks?
Thanks. So this goes back to when I was 12 years old, and it directly relates to what's happening to me right now. When I was 12 years old, I heard a voice when I was sitting in chapel at my parochial school calling me to full-time ministry. And as a 12-year-old wanting to be cool, I decided that wasn't the best route for me. So I followed my own path and really made a mess of my life. But then when I was 37, 25 years later, I realized that my life was a mess. And then I heard God calling, you know, it's time for you to start following what I set you out to do. At that time, I accepted Jesus and went on a path that has led me to today, which is actually my last day here at PBC, at least for a while, because I'm going off to seminary. And God called me to ministry, and here I am. I'm ready to go.
Praise God. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Mark. That's neat. This is, I think this is what we need to hear from each other. We need to hear that God is real, that he's at work. We need to hear that I lost my glasses, and I prayed, and God helped me find them. We need to hear that God makes calls in our lives and we follow in faith. And some of these things can feel real risky because, you know, somebody else can say, well, come on, that wasn't really God. But we need to share these things. And this is what encourages us to know that we didn't make this up. This is God at work. He is real. And the gospel begins with him. So the first part of Paul's story here, what he's kind of trying to do is to show that his gospel, his message, begins with God alone. Nobody else was involved. But we live in a community of people, and other people are involved in our faith and working it out. So he starts adding them back in, saying, now we just had God, but let's add people back into the mix and kind of see what happens. So he begins by telling us about his first visit to Jerusalem. Remember, he pointed out earlier that when he first met Christ, he didn't go to Jerusalem, but now he does. So listen to verses 18 to 24. Then 3 years later, I finally made the trip to Jerusalem so that I could actually meet Peter. And I ended up staying with him for about 2 weeks. But I didn't even see any of the other apostles, except for James, the brother of our Lord. It's so important that you know that I'm telling you the truth, that I swear before God that I am not lying to you. After that trip to Jerusalem, I traveled around Syria and Cilicia. Back then, no one from any of the Christian churches around Judea even knew what I looked like. But they had definitely heard the amazing turnaround, that the monster who once attacked the churches was now trying to spread the same gospel message that he used to work so hard to stamp out. And because of the miracle of my turnaround, they praised God in wonder. So he tells us about going up to Jerusalem. But at this point, he's kind of still trying to introduce people gradually into the mix. He says he didn't end up staying there very long. He didn't talk to a lot of people. He wants us to be clear that this is God's voice that's at work in his life, not the work of other people. That this message comes strictly from God. But then he goes on to a little bit more extensive visit. Listen to the first verses of chapter 2, the first 10 verses. Then after 14 years later, I finally made it back to Jerusalem. Barnabas and I went and took Titus with us too. I made the trip because God had spoken directly to me and told me to do it. While I was there, I met privately with the people who were considered to be leaders so that I could explain to them the gospel message that I had been sharing among the Gentiles. I wanted to make sure that all of my work wasn't completely contrary to what they understood the gospel to mean. After I explained my understanding of the gospel to them, everyone agreed with me that Titus, whom I had brought along, and was an uncircumcised Gentile, did not need to be circumcised to follow Christ. They all realized that the idea that someone would need to be circumcised came from imposters who pretended to follow Christ, but who in reality wanted to take away the freedom that Christ offers those who follow him, because they were jealous of that freedom. They don't want people to be free because they want to enslave them. The good news is that not one of the leaders was tempted to believe their false message for a single second, because they recognized that this would endanger the very truth of the gospel for you. You have to realize that it didn't matter to me that the people I was meeting with were considered to be leaders, because I know that God doesn't care about title or position. But the result of this meeting was that they didn't see anything at all wrong with the message that I had been given the task that I was preaching to the Gentiles. So instead of correcting anything about my message, they acknowledged that I had been given the task of spreading the gospel message to the Gentiles, just like Peter had been given the task of doing that for the Jews. And they realized that this came from above all of us, because the same God who charged Peter with his task charged me with mine. So because they saw that my calling had come directly from God, James and Peter and John, the official leaders of the church, accepted me and Barnabas as one of their own. The result of all this is that they validated my calling to preach to the Gentiles as equal to their calling to preach to the Jews. The only thing they asked me to do was to keep the needs of the poor people in mind. The funny thing is that that's exactly what I wanted to do anyway. So Paul tells these two stories about how after his initial encounter with Jesus, he starts to go and talk to some other people about it. And the result was that the community affirmed his gospel. He's walking this fine line of how do other people relate to my experience with God? He wants to make sure people understand that his message is from God, but also that other people have a role in it. And the first role they play is one of affirmation. His community affirmed his experience of God. And that's true for us too. Our community, as we come together, it affirms our experience of God. It doesn't create it. Our community doesn't cause our experience of God, but it does validate it and affirm it and encourage us that this could really be God. But for Paul, when he went to Jerusalem, there was no guarantee that things were going to go okay, that this meeting would go all right. Have you ever had a meeting like that where you know you're going to say something a little bit different than what people expect? And so you're kind of concerned and you kind of, you know, soft pedal it to make sure that things don't go too poorly. It's a little bit about what this was like for Paul. Here he was, he'd spent years preaching the gospel to Gentiles, and he's coming back to Jerusalem, coming back to the Jewish leaders of the church and saying, hey, this is my message. This is what I've been doing. Does this line up with what you guys have been doing? There's a little bit of a risk. How is this going to go okay? But the meeting ended up better than hoped. And you can hear that excitement in his tone in this passage, how he was thrilled that everybody agreed with him. They affirmed that this was indeed God working in him, the same God working in him that they had seen working among themselves. And they're able to do that because they recognized God at work. They recognized the same God at work in Paul. One of my favorite musical artists is a guy named Jack Johnson. I actually played you one of his songs during the series on Sabbath, if you remember. And one of the things about Jack Johnson is he has a very distinctive style, which is kind of a nice way of saying that all of his songs sound the same. But I like his music anyway. Now, the other day, one of his songs came on the radio. And my 5-year-old daughter, Eliana, heard it and said, hey, isn't this the guy that sang in the Curious George movie? Which indeed it was, Jack Johnson. See, she'd never heard that song, but she knew that sound. And she knew who sings like that. That's what happened in this meeting in Jerusalem. These Jewish leaders, they hadn't heard the song that Paul was singing. But when they did hear it, they said, I know that sound. They were able to recognize God as the artist. This is the God we're familiar with. So they celebrated it and they affirmed it as the work of God. It's a big deal for them to recognize that God is reaching out among Jews and Gentiles alike. That this new community is meant for everyone. And this is how we want to strive to relate to each other. We want to look around and recognize that God is at work among each of us in very different ways. But that's hard to do sometimes. Remember the title of this series, From Bumper Cars to Carnival Swings. Well, a lot of times I've noticed in Christian groups that we can tend to act like bumper cars with each other in this regard. It's easy to think that, you know, I'm excited about this particular area of ministry, or I'm excited about what God is doing in my life in this way. And if you don't share my excitement, or if you have a different excitement, I can say, well, that's probably not God, you know. It's hard for me to be excited about how God's working differently in your life. I know a friend who was involved in a college fellowship that really stressed the importance of evangelism. And they had kind of this ideal of a bold, confident, evangelistic style with other people. And this particular person was very shy, very quiet, and that kind of style really made her pretty uncomfortable. But she was a really talented artist. She was an art major. She had this kind of passion for communicating who God was through art. But the sad thing is it never really got affirmed or celebrated by this particular community, because they had a way that they expected God to work, and the way God was working in her heart was different. And that's tragic. When your community can't recognize God at work in your life because they only have one way, they only have one template for how God might be working. But we're called to live a different way. We're called to live as carnival swings. The gospel invites us to recognize that there is one Father, and we are all related to Him together. We're all connected to Him. But that how that works out is going to be different. We don't have to be threatened by those differences. We can be excited for what He's doing. I can hear a different song and say, I know that artist. I know that God. And really, we should expect that things be different in our lives, with different personalities and different backgrounds, different interests, different life circumstances, we should expect that the same God would do different things in our lives. We'd really have to wonder about this whole Christian thing if all of us looked exactly the same. If we all got excited about the same things and said the same lines, then you'd have to wonder, you know, is this God or is this just a really organized group of people? But if it's God, if God has spoken and works among us, then you would expect it's going to be very different. And we can celebrate that and affirm that in each other. How do we expect God to work in people's lives here at PBC? Do we have a template that we expect to be followed? I think sometimes we do. We expect God to work through Bible study. We expect God to give us insights into His Word. We expect people to be excited about being discipled and discipling others. But are there other ways that people are excited about how God's working in their lives that maybe aren't recognized as much around here? Are there ways that we can look to affirm those, to seek those out, listening to each other and saying, what is God doing? Don't be afraid to tell me. I'll have an open mind. I'll listen. And then say, you know, that does sound like God. That does sound like the God I know. How cool that He's working in such a unique way in your life. Well, this can be hard for me at times. I had coffee this week with a fellow college pastor, and sometimes those can be challenging, because anytime you kind of run across somebody who's doing similar things, there's opportunities to feel threatened or insecure about that. This person clearly had a very different ministry style than me, and when I come across that, I can think, well, you know, God seems to be leading this person in that direction, but I'm being led over here. Maybe I'm not really following God. Maybe I'm not hearing God's voice. For me, it can cause me to question my own experience of God. And it's funny how God kind of puts experiences like that in my life so I can apply my sermon even before I get a chance to preach it. But I see God doing that for me. Sometimes we question our experience of God because of other people. Sometimes we question their experience and we refuse to believe that God might do this in their life. My hope, though, is that in those times we can start to remember that it is the same God who works differently among us, and we can celebrate it. But there are times when an experience may not be from God. There are times when we hear people sharing something and we say, you know, I don't recognize that artist. And sometimes as a community, we don't affirm that it's the same God. But how do we know? How do we know which is which? When it's God and when it might not be God? I think one of the ways is by really knowing how God has worked in the past, especially in terms of how He's revealed Himself in Scripture. See, you don't have to listen to too many Jack Johnson songs to be able to recognize them. But the thing is that our God is a lot more creative than Jack Johnson. And He likes to surprise His people. I think that's clear in Scripture that God likes to be surprising. So as we kind of immerse ourselves in Scripture and immerse ourselves in how He's worked, we'll start to realize more and more of how He typically acts. And we'll be able to recognize Him and distinguish His work from others. We'll hear new songs and say, I do recognize that song. It's a little bit different than I might expect, but I see the same artist. Well, Paul actually concludes his story here by sharing about an incident where this type of thing happens, where he runs into a situation that isn't from God. Listen to verses 11 through 14 in chapter 2. Now, when Peter visited me in Antioch, I had to get in his face because he was behaving in a way that was completely wrong. You see, when he first arrived, he had no problem eating at the same table as the Gentiles who were part of our church. But then some people came to our church who claimed to represent James. And when they got there, Peter did a complete turnaround. He became really aloof from the Gentile believers. He avoided them and he wouldn't eat with them anymore because he was afraid of what the really Jewish people might think. The worst part is that most of the other Jewish believers followed his example. Eventually, even Barnabas became a hypocrite too by avoiding the Gentiles. But I realized that this simple action actually challenged the very heart of the gospel message. And so I called Peter to the carpet in front of everyone. I pointed out to him that even though he was a Jew, he thought it was okay to act like a Gentile. So why would he ask a Gentile to act like a Jew if he himself doesn't have to? Well, here's a case where people weren't affirming the gospel. They were acting in contradiction to it. So the gospel challenges them, and eventually it transforms them. Paul started out by showing how his gospel initially came from God directly. And then he showed how when he introduces it to the community, his community affirmed that gospel. But now there's a conflict within the community. Peter is singing a different song. And Paul says, that song is from men, not from God. And so we realize that this gospel, it's bigger than any of us. It's bigger than all of us. And that because of that, because it's bigger, because it's from God, it has the power to change us, to transform our community, to change the way we view each other, the way we relate to each other. Remember that Paul's point here is to say just that, that this message is from God. And the fact that the message has the power to change us, that should encourage us that, yeah, we'd expect that if it's from God. If a bunch of people got together and came up with this Christianity thing, then when it got tough, and when it kind of came head to head with the harsh realities of living that out in a community, you just change it. You make it easier, right? But if it's from God, then when things get tough, when things get complicated, you don't change the gospel. The gospel changes us. When things get complicated, we don't change the gospel. The gospel transforms us as a community. So just like we should expect the gospel to work out differently for us, we should expect it to change us. One of the implications of Paul's story here is that the gospel has everything to do with who you eat with. Have you thought about that? The gospel has everything to do with who you sit down and share a meal with. Think about who you regularly eat with. Your family, your friends. Why do you eat with them and not with other people? What Paul is saying is the gospel has everything to do with who you welcome into your life and who you exclude from your life. It's not just about having your sins forgiven. It's not just about going to heaven when you die. It's not just about having this close communion with God. It's about how we interact, who we interact with, how we interact with different people. It's about rich people eating with poor people, young eating with old. It's about whites eating with Hispanics and recovering addicts eating with successful business people. It's about one people eating together. That's why the communion table is so significant, because we come together and we eat together. So we should expect the gospel to rewrite the ways that we relate across different boundaries. We should expect to be different than a community without God. So I want to ask one more question before we wrap up. We shared a bit about how God has shown up in our individual lives. And I want to give us a chance just for one or two people to share, how have you seen God change the way we relate to each other? How have you seen God show up in transforming us as a community? Any brief examples to share? Sure. Tony?
I was sitting with a friend in a restaurant yesterday, and there was a white man and a black man sitting together, and there was a white woman and a black gentleman sitting together, and we were just thrilled that we've gotten past where we were in 1968, and that these people could sit in the restaurant together without being taken out and lynched for doing so, as they would have been in 1965, say. And we were just thrilled. And, you know, thank God that we're getting to the point where we're getting to. And the church, I think, is leading in that area.
That's neat. Thanks for sharing that. Any other examples? Now, one came up this morning as we were talking about Ed Moore, and just thinking about the people that have responded and have shown up and sleeping on the floor of a hospital waiting room to support this family that's been a part of our church. And I know that kind of touched me, thinking about how, boy, you just really show that somebody goes through hard times and the community responds. And that's not necessarily natural, but that's an evidence that God's at work among us.
I have one. We were at our cabin. We were camping and walking up the road, and our dog ran into another. We've got a Doberman. Our dog ran into another campground, and this man came out furious, and he said, get that dog away from my cabin. I've got a gun. I'm going to shoot you if you come onto my property again. Like, okay, come on, you guys. Come on, you guys. This dog is the nicest dog in the world, and it was just kind of protective of the kids. So we had just been earlier in the boat. We had just been studying with the kids one of the Proverbs, a soft answer turns away wrath. So we were talking about that as we were walking up to our cabin, and my husband then, Jeff, walked down to the cabin and really apologized. I am so sorry. We'll keep your dog off your our dog off your property, and hey, you know, I hope there's no hard feelings. And Jeff really responded humbly and just, you know, just let's try to keep this really nice and let's try to be good neighbors. So later the kids and I were out in the canoe on Lake Shasta, and we happened to come across this same guy in his boat. Totally different, totally different. He said, you guys, I am so sorry. I'm scared to death of dogs. I don't even own a gun. I don't even know what I was saying. I'm not even like, I just went crazy. And a really total flip, total change around. And we were just saying, a soft answer turns away wrath. It was so cool. It was really scriptural. Yeah, I thought that was cool.
That's neat. Thanks, Debbie. That's cool. Well, this is what Paul's trying to get us to see, that this is the type of thing we should expect. We should expect to see boundaries crossed. We should expect to see a community transformed by this message, if it's really from God. So he reminds us that his message is authentic. It really does come from God. And we take comfort in that. We need that because we ask these questions. Is this God? Is this other people? But as we realize that God has been at work in our lives, and as we share with each other, hey, this is how I've seen God at work. It might be silly. You may not believe this, but I really think that God did this. Isn't that cool? And as we come together as a community and affirm that, boy, I see God doing this in your life, and I wouldn't ever expect that because it's totally different than what I've seen, but God really seems to be calling you to this and doing that. How exciting. When we affirm God's work in each other, and then when we allow ourselves to be changed and challenged, when we allow the gospel to say, maybe you should rethink the way you relate to these people. Maybe you should think about who you eat with and why you eat with them. We see God at work, and we're reminded that this message is from him. So it all hinges on the source of this message, just like the command to fire a nuclear weapon did in Crimson Tide. Now, because this movie's a little bit older, I feel justified in giving away the ending. So if you haven't seen it, it's not my problem. But in the end, it turns out that this message was really important. It turns out that Mr. Hunter was justified in going to such extreme measures to figure out what it said and who it came from. It turns out that they shouldn't have fired their nuclear weapons, and it's a good thing they didn't. Determining the authenticity of that message ended up changing the course of history. And I think if this gospel message that we have, if it's authentic too, it will change us. Let's look for ways that we see God working in our lives. Let's affirm ways that we see God working in each other, even though it's different, and let's expect to be transformed by this message. It might just change the course of history.